You're listening to the Doggeritaville podcast. I'm Laura.
And I'm Lily. We are two dog professionals with two different styles, two different backgrounds, and two common goals.
To drink delicious margaritas and talk about dogs.
Welcome to Doggeritaville.
Welcome to episode 10 of the Doggeritaville podcast. Today we're talking about puppies and drinking champagne margaritas because Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year. For every episode, each of us does our best to create a delicious margarita around our theme. We post the recipes on Instagram so you can try them at home, and you can let us know if you have an idea for a theme. Our recipes always differ, so you can have some variety to choose from.
This episode is about puppies, and if you haven't already, make sure to listen to our episodes number 3 and 9, which are about picking your next dog and then also socializing your dog. Both are super important topics when we think about puppies. While I may not personally be a puppy fan, most people are, so it's important that you have all the necessary information to ensure that your puppy grows to be a good dog. We are taking a little bit more of a timeline approach because there's a lot of podcasts about puppies and we wanted to be a little bit different. But just going through what you should do before your puppy comes, what you should do during their first few days, their first few weeks, and then, of course, my favorite part, the terrible teens.
Well, let's start by talking about what to do before your puppy even comes home.
So I think my biggest thing is just that you need to have a plan, right? Where, and obviously your plan is going to change because it's a living creature, don't get me wrong. But you need to have some sort of a kind of outline as far as, like, do you want your puppy to sleep in your room, in a kennel, that sort of thing. Assuming that your puppy is coming home at around 8 to 10 weeks, they're probably going to have to sleep in a kennel. Otherwise, you're just a braver person than I am. But have that plan, right? With things like, are you going to allow them on the furniture? All of this should be kind of decided beforehand with the idea that in the not so distant future, they are going to be bigger, more so for large breed dogs. But I see it a lot that, you know, they're puppies and they're small and they're cute and they're cuddly. And then when they start hitting 50, 60 plus pounds, all of a sudden you're like, oh, we're changing the rules now. And it's like, well, you know, we've talked about this. You need to be clear with your communication. So even though it's only 10 weeks and it's a very cute little 15-pound snuggle puppy, it's not always going to be that size.
Right.
So if you're not going to allow it on the furniture when it's older, then you need to not allow it on the furniture when it's little and cute. So just keep that in mind. Always be thinking of the future. If you allow your puppy to jump up because, again, it's cute and you want its attention, you're not going to think it's cute when he's 90 pounds. So keep that in mind. It's easier to just set those boundaries right out of the gate instead of switching the game later or teaching them not to do habits that you've taught them.
Yeah, things like jumping and biting. It's like when they're little. It's like,
oh, God, the mouthing.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. But then, like, as soon as they're big enough where that all of that hurts, then it's a problem.
Well, and especially coming from, like, a behavior mod, almost every single dog with a bite history, the root of that problem is that they never learned bite inhibition. And you learn, which I just realized I didn't put anything about bite inhibition in here and I should have. But
well, that's really more about what, you know, the puppy being with its siblings and its mom. And we covered that in a different
episode. Yeah, that's true. So. That's true. But, like, I hear it from almost every puppy owner of, like, oh, he'll just grow out of it. And it's like, no, no. You have to teach him it's not okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have, like, a whole big thing here. Puppies are my jam. Puppies are not Laura's jam. So
I like, though, this is also, like, a perfect example of our different personalities where I'm like, yeah, just think ahead and be clear. And you're like, so you're going to need food and a leash. And I don't even, that shit doesn't not cross my mind.
Yep. So the first thing that I have written down as part of my plan is purchase everything you're going to need before your puppy gets there. So have their food ready. If you want training treats and a treat pouch, which I do recommend, especially for puppies, you're going to be so surprised how often you're going to be like, oh, I need a treat for this. And you don't have one. Enrichment activities, so Kongs, bully sticks, that kind of thing. A pen, a bed, a crate, places for your dogs for your dog to be. A collar, leash, long leash, harness. So anything you're going to walk your dog on. Any grooming tools you want. I personally don't have a ton of grooming tools, just like a brush and nail clippers. But for some people, especially with hypoallergenic dogs, they want a lot more things because there's a lot more care involved.
And also, if you've seen Lily's dogs, that's a shocking statement. Your dogs are both very floofy. How do you not have a bunch of grooming tools?
I mean, all they really need is a brush and in between their grooming appointments.
Yeah, that's true.
And then toys and chews. Any puppy toys and chews that you want to have. And I recommend having chews that are all different kinds of textures. That will help you stop your puppy from chewing everything in your house. Because the reason that puppies chew is because it feels good on their mouth while they're teething. And it's also good for their jaws. But they want different things at different times. So like if your dog is chewing on a blanket, it's helpful to have a soft toy. Because that's what he wants to chew right now. If he's chewing on a table leg, you want something a little bit harder. Anything to add on what to purchase, Laura?
If we want to like get super specific, which I think this episode's going to be pretty long as is, but for collars for puppies, I'm always just super sure to get like breakaway collars in case they get stuck on their pen or something like that, or I just make sure to take the collar off when they go in their kennel or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. Because puppies are not adult dogs and they are very dumb. And if they get stuck on something, they will kill themselves. They aren't smart enough to get off of it. And then, yeah, for puppies, I prefer harnesses, whereas adult dogs, not so much. But I think I would put a disclaimer of, like, doing all the different toys and chews and stuff. We want to make sure that we don't overstimulate and overwhelm them. So make sure you're rotating those and not just having them out all of the time.
Yeah, especially during this phase, it's a good idea to kind of be in control of the toys, like kind of assess what they need and then give it to them rather than just having toys out on the ground and letting them go pick one.
And especially too with the new puppy, you know, they're already stressed. They're already probably switching food, all of that stuff. You don't want to give them like 3 bully sticks a day, right? So just making sure that either you stick with like the same proteins or they only get 1 edible chew a day or something like that. Because we don't want puppy diarrhea at 3 a.m.
That's something I didn't put in the episode, is that your puppy will have diarrhea and it's not a big deal. Things that will help are, I just use pumpkin puree. I use pumpkin puree for everything. Dogs love it and it's really good for them.
Yeah.
And if you just give them a couple tablespoons of it, it will help firm up their poops. We always have to do that when we have new puppies here.
I will say that if you did not listen to episode 3 and you maybe didn't get your puppy from somewhere legit and they're having consistent diarrhea, they do need to get checked for Giardia.
Good point. Yes.
Because especially like if they're from a not great breeder or something like that, chances are they do have worms or Giardia. That's super, super, super common. Even if the breeder's not terrible, but just maybe isn't the best, that it's common.
Yeah.
Pet store, common. anything like that, it's extremely common. So don't panic if your puppy has worms or Giardia. It's very common. It's not a big deal. They just go to the vet, get some treatment, and you'll be good again.
So the next thing that I have written down is to prepare your routine to incorporate a puppy's needs. This is something that I feel like gets overlooked a lot, which is crazy to me, because like if you're having a baby, you're like getting ready and fixing your whole schedule and planning all the stuff. But it's like people think if you're getting a puppy, you're just like getting a puppy. I don't know. They feel like their lives don't need to change at all. But your puppy needs a lot of things. First of all, they will need a ton of potty breaks, especially right at first. Like you'll be out at least once an hour taking your puppy out to go potty. They need exercise. They need training sessions. So I would plan to have 2 to 3 10-minute training sessions a day. And then they obviously need meals. And that's outside of just spending time with your puppy.
As far as training sessions go, I don't like to do like the set 10-minute training sessions. I don't know why. It just bothers me. I just incorporate real-life scenarios. So if we're working on sit, I'll work at that at mealtimes, because eventually they're going to have to do the sit stay for mealtimes. So I don't really do specific training sessions, but it's just like, oh, if we're having breakfast, we're going to practice our sit for a minute. If we're having lunch, we're going to practice our sit for a minute. So I guess I just don't label it that way.
So the next thing that we have written down is to research and prepare for how to deal with certain situations. So potty training is one of them. Crate training is another one. We don't have to go into like how to do all this stuff because it's all online. If you're getting a puppy, you need to do your research. Sorry. So potty training, crate training, what you're going to do about jumping, biting, mouthing, what you're going to do about the puppy chewing on everything you love, which it will do. How to socialize, how to understand dog language, which you could listen to our podcast about. And another important thing to prep for is where the puppy is going to be throughout the day. So if you're bringing home a new puppy, I strongly discourage you from just letting it roam the house. It needs to have a space that it can be. And that's for if you can watch it very, very carefully, it still needs a space that it can be in. So maybe like one room of the house where you're watching the dog and you have it prepped like nothing damageable on the floor, stuff like that. And then if you're not going to be able to watch it, it needs to be in a pen or a crate, because if your puppy is not in a pen or a crate and you are not watching it, it will teach itself a lot of interesting things that will not be fun for you to deal with later. And then the next thing is to come to an agreement as a family about the rules for all of the stuff that we just talked about. So everyone in your family should know the rules and agree to them and be consistent on them, because if people within your household are not being consistent with your puppy's not going to learn anything.
Yeah, that's a huge one that comes up constantly. Like, even if you don't have kids, just like a husband and wife, even if there's 10 people in the house, if one of them allows the dog to jump, it's going to keep jumping on everyone. Like, everybody has to be on the same page with everything. Because again, even if one person out of 10 people is letting the dog do something that it's not supposed to be doing, then you're not going to be able to stop that behavior. Because every once in a while, it pays off.
Exactly. So consistency is key for everything. And then the last thing that I have written down is to create a quote-unquote yes space or a few of them. So I'll explain what that means really briefly, because this is already a super long segment. But basically, like, one of the problems that people run into a lot when they get a new puppy is they're not fully prepared for how much mayhem a puppy can cause. And not on purpose, just like by being a puppy who doesn't know anything. So it's easy to see your puppy chewing on something and then you're saying no, and then the puppy starts chewing something else and you're saying no, and then it starts doing all these other things that it just doesn't know not to do yet, and you're just going no, 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 no. And so it's really nice to have a space where, for the most part, your puppy is not going to just be in a string of no behaviors. So for me, my yes space is my living room. Obviously, I have like furniture in here that they can't chew on, but for the most part, like, there's nothing on the ground that they cannot chew on, or that I will be upset if it gets peed on or something like that. I don't leave shoes on the ground in here. I don't leave my shit on the ground in here. It's just an empty space with whatever toys I leave out for them and their water dish. And then I also have a yes space for when I'm not able to watch them, like I talked about before. So I have a pen for them where there's literally nothing in the pen except things that they are able to chew and play with and interact with. And so if I'm not able to watch them, they're not creating bad habits on their own. Anything to add?
No, my puppies are either in the kennel if I can't watch them, or I'm watching them.
And Laura and I are both dog trainers, obviously, and so we're really well versed in being able to see like when a dog's about to do something. Like, we can kind of predict what's about to happen and get ahead of it. So the yes space is not super important for us, although I still have one, but it will be very important for you. So I highly recommend, even if you're able to watch your dog, just have a space where they can't get into too much no behaviors.
I mean, I feel like if you have a puppy, your whole house should be puppy proofed. So
that is our take on what to do before you bring your puppy home. We will take a break here, and when we get back, we will talk about the first few days with your puppy. Margarita check. Laura, how did you make your New Year's champagne margarita?
I did a pink champagne margarita, and it is a goddamn delight. So again, apparently I only choose margaritas that make a pitcher. And so it's 1 cup champagne, 2 cups pink lemonade, which is my favorite anyways, 1/2 cup tequila, 1/2 cup triple sec, and 1/4 cup lime juice, which for those of us that don't use bullshit lime juice, is a lime and a half. She's laughing because I used to be that person. And now I'm not, and I judge everyone. But it's pretty good. I was hesitant because I don't really like champagne. But it's really good. It's not as pink as I wanted it to be, so that's kind of sad. But I'm sad that it's not as pretty as I wanted, but I also didn't spend any time on it. So who's to blame? What did you do?
I basically just made a margarita and put champagne in it. What I made two full glasses of margarita. So
they're both gone now, aren't they?
Not all the way.
For reference, about an hour before we did this, I got a message from Lily's husband that's just like, Lily is drunk. And I was like, oh God, we don't record for another hour and she hasn't done the outline yet.
So welcome to episode 11 of our podcast. So I did 3 ounces tequila, 3/4 ounce of triple sec, 2 juice limes. I did not put any agave in it. Then I shook that with ice, strained it over ice, and then topped that with a small bottle of Prosecco, which was just over 6 ounces. So it's not super exciting. It's pretty yummy, but.
Is Prosecco champagne?
I mean, nothing is champagne except champagne, because nothing is technically champagne if it's not from the specific region of France or whatever. But it's like, okay. It's like the same thing.
Oh, okay.
So now we're going to talk about the first few days with your puppy.
The first few days with your new puppy for me is just really boring. Some good old decompression. They generally have never been away from their mom or their litter mates, depending on where you get your dog. Even if you have other dogs, it's still a really big adjustment. My best advice is just first and foremost to get to know the dog that you have in front of you, right? Because me and Lily could give you rules all day, but the fact is that not all puppies are the same. So you need to be able to kind of assess what rules are going to work for you and what aren't, right? And in that same regard, some rules that you had going in, you might have to change.
Yep.
But not every rule is a hard and fast rule, right? Make the best judgments based on the puppy that you have. I know everybody's an expert and there's a lot of science behind it and whatnot. But again, you know your dog better than anybody else. So just kind of keep that in mind. See how they respond to things and move forward accordingly. So like, yeah, I'm going to say things like make sure that your interactions with your existing dogs and cats are short and sweet and heavily monitored. But if you introduce your puppy and they're like, fuck yeah, this is the greatest, then you probably don't really need to separate them quite as much. You're still going to need to separate them to a certain extent, but like we don't have to worry about them getting overwhelmed if they're just like, hell yeah, I'm in, right?
Yeah.
So whereas if your puppy's a little bit more hesitant and like, who the fuck are you and what the hell is this? Then yeah, you're going to do short, small segments of time together. So it really does depend on the puppy that you have in front of you. Do you have a confident, playful, let's go puppy, or do you have a where the hell am I puppy?
Yeah, and Sophia Yen has a really good checklist on her page to see like where your puppy's at if you're not so familiar with dog language. So it has like, you know, if your dog is doing this and this and this and they're comfortable, if they're doing this and this and this, watch out. So sometimes you may not know whether your puppy is comfortable or not, so it might be helpful to look up something like that so you can figure out where your dog is.
And also pro tip, Sophia Yen has all the answers. I don't think I found a single subject that her website doesn't have some sort of answer to. So if in doubt, just go there. And it's pretty much all free. She has books and stuff that you can buy, which are really good. But for the most part, her website is just full of free stuff that solves most things.
Yeah.
But which brings up another point that I actually didn't write down. I wouldn't say again that this is a hard and fast rule, but chances are you should get some sort of trainer. Obviously, if you're a super experienced dog owner and you've raised 10,000 puppies, go ahead, do what you always do. But like, if you don't know dogs very well or you're not sure what to do, then you should just hire a trainer.
Yeah.
Not because it's difficult or not because your dog has issues, but more for you, because if you don't know dogs very well, then you need to learn. And why would you just figure it out on your own? So yeah, definitely hiring a trainer is a great idea for a puppy. Or even better, I really like puppy classes. Group classes are kind of my favorite for puppies. And a lot of the times, even if they hire me as a private trainer, I'll still have them enroll in a puppy class with someone else just to get the like socialization aspect of it. Back to the point. So yeah, definitely keep things calm on the first few days. Ensure interactions with your existing dogs and cats or even your small children are short and sweet and heavily monitored. Obviously, a puppy is not going to hurt your kids, generally speaking, but we want to have them have like a healthy, respectful relationship too. So don't let your three-year-old grab the puppy, right? My niece is almost three, and that is exactly what she would do. So obviously, we want the dog to learn to tolerate certain things from the kids, but the first few days is not the time to be teaching that, right? I also, for the first few days, and this changes drastically as time goes on, but for the first few days, I try to avoid having visitors or going on any outings because it's really just about settling into the house and bonding with the family.
Yeah. Decompression is the first thing I have on my list too, because it's very important and often overlooked. And that's why we have this timeline chunked up the way that we do. We're spending a whole segment talking about just a few days. And that's because it's different than any other period of time that you're going to spend with your puppy. So these first few days should be pretty chill and just kind of like a sweet, happy time with your new dog. One mistake that people tend to make in the first few days of owning a puppy is trying to teach a bunch of commands or enforce a bunch of rules right away. And I know we just spent a whole segment telling you to research exactly how you're going to deal with certain situations and enforce a bunch of rules, but now I'm telling you to wait just a minute and do that later. Also, maybe an unpopular take, but I don't actually start teaching any cues until the puppies have been here at least a week. And keep in mind that I get paid to teach them cues. And so the reason that I do that is because I think that they actually do learn better and quicker if I spend these first few days doing different things. So they don't learn sit, down, leave it, anything in the first few days. They don't even learn a recall word, although they do learn how to come to me for different reasons. But the first thing that I do with the puppies that come through here is set a foundation that will be easy to build up from. So before we start enforcing rules, I need to prove to the puppy that I am a really good thing. So not only do I give rewards, but I myself am very rewarding. I'm fun to be around, and it is a good thing to be near me. And this makes my attention a commodity, and it makes things so much easier to teach because the puppy is not just chasing treats for learning cues and whatever else, but it's also viewing time with me and attention from me as a reward. So it's just so much easier to train anything you want to train with that in your tool belt.
I almost kind of take the opposite approach, and that I just leave them the fuck alone until they decide they want to be my friend.
So that's a good point, because it's important to note, which I didn't write anywhere, this is all choice-based. So I'm not all over the puppy, but when they're choosing to be around me and be near me, then it's very rewarding for them.
Well, and I think too, because I got started with Taiwan dogs, who you literally can't fuck with, I got very accustomed to like, hey, if you want to be around me, cool. All good things happen here. If you don't want to be around me, no one's going to bother you.
Yeah.
So just kind of teaching them that like, hey, you make the choices here, right? Like there's parameters within that. Like obviously if you're chewing on the couch, I'm going to get involved. But but for the most part, like you make the choice if you want to hang out with me or you want to hang out with the existing dog, then you can do that and it's going to be positive. But if you don't, we'll leave you alone, right?
Yeah.
So just making sure that like Lily said that it is choice-based.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and I'm glad you said that because I did not write it down. But yeah, I'm not chasing the puppy around throwing treats at it. Like, if the puppy does not want to be around me, the worst thing I can do is impose myself on the puppy. That's not going to make the puppy like me at all. So whenever the puppy is making choices to be near me, it's just always super rewarding for them.
And if they're not making the choice to be around you, finding something that encourages them, like if they're food motivated, obviously, then you can lure them a little bit. I mean, like I said, obviously, if they're making the choice not to be around you, that's their choice. Leave them alone. But like, if it's a consistent choice and they're legitimately like, no.
Yeah.
Then we have to kind of start cluing them in, right? So like a squeaky toy or something, just something to start cluing them in to like, hi, I provide you with the good stuff. because certain puppies, depending on, you know, where you got your dog from or whatever, they are perfectly happy to just never interact with you.
Yeah.
Or if they're just especially skittish or whatever it is. So
another thing that I do is reinforced right off the bat that coming to me is awesome. And it's also awesome if I'm approaching you. So again, with the caveat that I'm not ever imposing myself on the puppy. But I want the puppy to realize that every time it so much as looks in my direction and moves in my direction and comes all the way near me, something awesome is going to happen. So maybe they get a treat, a toy, a little play. I'll talk to them, I'll smile at them, I'll pet them, and all the time I'm evaluating what they like and what they want and giving them those things when they make the choice to look at me and come near me. Also, on the flip side, I always bring a reward of some kind as I'm approaching. Again, rewards can be as small as positive attention, depending on what your dog likes, or as big as a nice high-value treat. And by laying this foundation, it makes it easy for me to call the puppy away from things because they love coming to me, and it makes it easy for me to approach the puppy and get dangerous or yucky things away from them, or just things I don't want them to have, like my socks. Because puppies will learn very quickly to run away from us if we're always approaching because we're trying to stop them from doing something or like taking something from them. They learn really quick, like, I better run. So I spend a lot of time proving to them that it's awesome to come near me and it's awesome when I go near them. And it's a really incredible foundation to build on. And a natural byproduct of teaching the puppy that it's awesome when I come near them is also teaching them that it's awesome to drop whatever they have. So no matter how good a job you did of creating your little yes space, you will be surprised at how many things a puppy will grab and put in its face throughout the day that it should not have. And a trap a lot of people fall into is just constantly chasing the puppy around and grabbing things from it. But this will do one of two things. It will either turn grabbing things into a game of chase, or it will create a resource guarding dog. So I'm trying to make it clear right away that if I approach, I will have something insanely fun to do, like a treat or a toy that they want, and then they will naturally drop whatever they have and they won't feel weird about it. So I just had someone this week actually tell me that they were playing swapping games with their dog and it was not going well. And come to find out, they were swapping their dog regular treats for a bully stick. And so they're taking something like one of the most high value items that a dog can have and swapping it with a standard treat. So that is not a good way to prevent resource guarding, as they for some reason thought. But if you're swapping with your dog, you always need to be giving them something higher value, especially when they're a puppy and developing that learning. Like when mom comes near me and takes this thing from me, I get something worse. They're going to learn that pretty quickly.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think, and again, I generally am not around puppies because I generally don't like them. But the last puppy I had, I don't think I ever really approached them when they had something that they didn't, that they weren't supposed to. I mostly relied just on recall, like faking them out a little bit. So like fucking Hazel. She's the puppy from hell. And she was a terrible teen. She wasn't a puppy. But so anytime, which was often, that she would have something in her mouth that she wasn't supposed to, I would just get fake really excited and be like, oh my God, Hazel. And I would totally psych her out and she'd come running over and be like, oh my God, what? And I'd be like, thank you. And I would take whatever it was and I'd be like, good job, good girl. And so I would just verbally praise her because the reality is I'm usually doing something and I don't always have something to swap. So yes, that is the more textbook way to do it and probably the more accurate way to do it. I just don't have the time for that all the time. So
well, if that was working for her, then your attention might have been pretty high value for her.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously if I had something to swap, I would do that, but sometimes it's the end of a long day and I'm not fucking getting up, so I could see there's about 1,000 ways that that could backfire, don't get me wrong, because then they're just going to be picking up random shit and trying to get you to call them. But that's more my like real life of like, hey, I'm not, sometimes I'm just sitting down and I can't fucking deal with you anymore.
But whatever route you decide to go, whether you're going the recall route or the approaching route, it's just good to set that foundation of it's fun to come to me and it's fun when I come to you, because then you're not, you don't have a dog on your hands that's just running away from you when it has something.
Exactly. And I would venture to say that making having something be negative is the wrong approach, right? Even though it is negative, like we know that. you can't have my shoe in your mouth or whatever it is. They don't need to know that.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, they do. Obviously, we don't want them to keep getting pillows. But if every time they get a pillow, we distract them with something else, they're going to stop getting a pillow, right? So just keep in mind that just because, yes, you shouldn't have XYZ in your mouth doesn't mean that we have to convey it in that way of like, oh my God, that's terrible. What are you doing?
Right.
If we make it more of a positive game, it's going to be a little bit more effective than if we're punishing them for it, right? If you take a second and control yourself and try to flip it positive, it's going to go much smoother.
Yes, absolutely.
Because for me, I have a really hard time like not being like, God damn it.
Yep.
Which is why I don't like puppies. But if you can control yourself and just be like, okay, she's not supposed to have that. I need to get her to bring it to me because I'm too lazy to get up. It goes a lot better.
Yeah, I was just talking with a client this week who was having trouble with recall. And when we were talking about it, she kind of told me like, oh, well, yeah, sometimes I call him because he's barking at the fence. And so I call him and I say, you're not supposed to do that. And so it's like, okay, like, yeah, he's not supposed to do that. And our instinct is to say like, you shouldn't be doing that. But what's happening for him is he's coming back to you and then getting scolded. So like, he's only going to come back to you so many more times. Before he realizes that he just shouldn't ever come back to you. So if we can make it more fun, like, oh, yeah, you did it. You came back to me, even though you were barking at the fence or you had this weird thing in your mouth, then it's going to continue being rewarding.
Yeah. But yeah, I would say that's probably one of the biggest issues that all puppy parents have is the catch me if you can. I have something I'm not supposed to have game.
Yeah. Finally, another thing that I do right away is I start rewarding calm behavior. So a normal day for a puppy is either being super excited and fun and playful or being completely passed out. There's rarely any middle ground. There's no being awake and sitting still at the same time. And that's because being playful and having fun is naturally rewarding for puppies. Duh. But sitting or laying down calmly is not a naturally rewarding behavior. So that's where I give Mother Nature a little hand and create rewards for those calm behaviors that I like to see. So whenever my puppies decide to sit or lay down, they very calmly get a treat from me. That's an important part of it. If you are not calm on your end, like if your puppy lays down and you're like, yay, then it's going to pop right back up and be like, whoa. So if your puppy's laying down or sitting, it needs to be like a really calm, like, here's a treat. And often if they lay down or sit for more than a few seconds, they'll get more treats. And so they very quickly learn that it can be just as rewarding to be calm as it is to play. And I will just caveat that with puppies obviously need to play. They need stimulation and exercise and all of that. So calm behavior cannot and will not be their entire lifestyle, but we can at least help them incorporate it into their busy puppy schedule.
Busy puppy schedule. That's funny. I think when I want calm, quiet time, I usually just give them like a longer lasting chew. I'm like, please just stop for a minute. Here's a bully stick. But yeah, I don't treat them for being calm because that's just, I got shit to do. And I also am not a very calm person, so that might be part of the problem.
Cool. Well, I think it's very important. So if you have the time and the space to reward your puppy for choosing to be calm, then I would definitely do that. Of course, you always have the option of crating them or penning them if you just kind of need them out of your hair or giving them a Kong or something to work on. But I like to also reward them for choosing to be calm when they don't have to. And it kind of sets the foundation of them choosing to be calm more often. That is the first few days with your puppy. We will take a break here, and when we get back, we'll talk about the first few weeks with your puppy. Margarita check. Laura, how are you enjoying your champagne margarita?
I'd be enjoying it a lot more if I didn't have to watch myself. I have to go drive after this, so I can't have more than one, and it's really annoying to me. Because it's delicious, and normally I just drink with reckless abandon during recording and then go do nothing for the rest of the night, but I can't do that tonight, and I'm annoyed. But more to the point, it is delicious.
Does it taste more pink lemonade-y now that you're kind of into it?
No, I would say it tastes more tequila-y now that I'm okay. Into it. but it's pretty good. I think I actually finally got a pitcher because I usually make it in a giant bowl because I don't have a pitcher. So I finally got a pitcher, and so I filled the pitcher with ice, and so there's no ice in my cup, which I don't like. So I would change that. Okay. But other than that, ice is a very important thing in my life. I don't think you understand.
I've gathered that from our time together.
I'm just saying. Your margarita's boring, so I'm guessing you like it because it's mostly just a margarita.
Okay.
You didn't even get excited for this theme.
It's half champagne, and I like it a lot. I'm feeling pretty good, okay? It's
clearly. I think you've been feeling pretty good for a while.
All right, here we go. After the first few days are over and you're ready to get down to business, it is now time to start teaching cues and enforcing rules. And remember that your puppy's attention span is very short, and your puppy is also not always going to be in the right headspace to do training. So you need to be prepared for that because it can get very frustrating, especially for someone like me who needs things to happen on my time or else I flip out. So if you're not ready for it, it can be frustrating. But pick a couple of times in a day where you can do short training sessions, no longer than 10 minutes, and make sure that your puppy has had plenty of exercise and enrichment so that they can focus. And another part of training with puppies is to start super duper small. So a mistake that a lot of people make is if they teach their puppy to sit, they now expect the dog to be able to sit in any environment in any situation. And that is just not going to happen. So you need to start small and slowly build to more difficult things.
Yeah. So I think we need to clarify a little bit. Lily just abandoned me to go eat a Pop-Tart. She very quietly snuck off screen. I think one of the things we need to clarify is kind of what exercise is for puppies. Because obviously you can't full throttle exercise a puppy. When we say exercise your puppy, I think we mean things like playing fetch or giving it playtime with other dogs, things like that. Because you're obviously not going to start jogging your puppy or hiking your puppy or doing anything crazy like that. Yeah. Depending on how old they are, if you've only had them a couple weeks, they're probably not old enough to even go on walks. So like playing fetch, things like that, running around the house, running up and down the stairs. I don't know. What's good exercise for puppies?
Well, fetch is good, but it's important to note that you'd want to keep it like really small. So it's not like throwing a ball across the yard and your puppy's running all the way across the yard and coming back. So I do fetch like in my living room because like Laura said, you can't just start exercising your dog super hard when they're puppies because their joints are still developing and it could hurt them.
Yeah. So like for reference, your dog is not supposed to do like strenuous hikes or go jogging or run on the treadmill or anything like that until they're over a year. So that's something to keep in mind. I have, for some reason, people teaching their like 8-month-old dogs to jog, and I'm like, no, they can't go jogging yet. I know they're in their terrible teens and they're driving you nuts, but no. So yeah, just by exercising a puppy, we basically mean kind of giving them something to do and like low scale exercise, right? And then as far as the first few weeks go, I mean, it's mostly just the boring basics of getting them used to wearing a collar. I'll talk on this a little bit more in a minute, but your dog can't go out until it's fully vaccinated. So people don't have them wear collars. And I'm like, well, now you're going to have a however big puppy freaking out about wearing a collar because you've had it for a couple months and it hasn't worn a collar. I would rather go through that freak out when they're 5 pounds instead of 30, personally. So getting them used to collars, getting them used to wearing the harness, getting them used to wearing the leash around the house, things like that. Because anybody that's ever had a puppy knows that the second you put pressure on the leash, they're like, oh my God. Or they refuse to walk, or they try to drag you, or whatever it is. So the first few weeks for me is just getting them used to that basic stuff, getting them used to people coming over the doorbell, things like that, which I find very boring, which is why I don't do puppies.
Yeah, what we do for leashes here is we have like a time set during the day where they just wear their harnesses and their leashes around the house. I'm not even holding it, but just to kind of get used to that sensation, because they kind of flip out about a lot of things. And one of the things that they'll flip out about is once they're kind of positioned behind you and the leash kind of goes over their head like this. You can't see me, those of you listening, but my hands are above my head. And when the leash is in that position, they tend to kind of flip out. So it's good to kind of get them used to the different places that the leash can be. Another important thing is to do lots of work where the puppy has to be separate from you and entertain itself. So lots of crate time and pen time. And then once your puppy is a little bit bigger and can be trusted out of the pen or the crate by itself, just in a different room from you. The puppy should get used to entertaining itself separately from you in a few different situations. So the ones I can think of are the puppy can see you walking around and going about your business. The puppy can't see you but knows you're home. And the puppy is home alone while you are out of the house. And especially during COVID, it is such an easy step to miss because a lot of us are just home all the time. But the puppy needs to practice being alone or that will cause significant problems later on.
So yeah, I mean, I don't really do all of that. Like I said, if I can't watch my puppies, they're in their kennel. I don't really trust any puppies to have alone time in the house.
And to be clear, I will have puppies up to 4 weeks, and I never trust them alone in a room by themselves. Yeah. So this is, like, later on in puppyhood.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, so as far as, like, leaving them alone, I always have mine kenneled, but I always start, you know, short periods of time. So, like, if I'm going to run to the grocery store, which, again, in the time of COVID may not be happening because I Instacart everything, but I'll do short little, like, 45-minute things and see how that goes. And then kind of graduate up from there, right? I'm not just starting with, like, oh, I'm going to go to work for 8 hours. Good luck. Mm-hmm. So kind of a gradual increase in that home alone time. And then when it does come time that you do want to start trying to leave them out of the kennel, it's the same thing. Leave them out of the kennel. And again, this is when they're much older. This isn't puppies. So I don't know why I'm talking about it, but I am.
Also, neither of us have any dogs who don't get kenneled, right? Or wait, Charlie doesn't.
Charlie and Peter and Churchill don't.
Oh, all three of them. Okay.
Yeah. But so when you start not kenneling them, it's the same thing as when you start kenneling them. You know, do it for 30, 45 minutes at a time and then graduate from there. Again, you're not going to go to work for 8 hours and see what your house looks like when you come home. So just keep that in mind. You can't just go all willy-nilly to one or the other. So something that I don't think that has come up in any of our other episodes is puppy health, which I really want to do like a health and wellness and nutrition episode, but Lily doesn't want to. So
I just don't know anything about it, dude.
I'll put it in here. You take care of your dogs, don't you? So puppy health is something that there's a lot of different opinions on. I've had clients that haven't left the house until they're 6 months because that's what their vet told them to do. yeah, I know. Lily's giving me a face. and I can see where it's confusing because everybody's like, parvo, parvo, parvo.
Right.
But so I guess, I don't know, I'm assuming the vet didn't tell them this, that there was some sort of mix-up or confusion, but their puppy couldn't get fixed until it was 6 months, so they thought that it couldn't go anywhere until it got fixed. Like, that was part of the vaccine schedule almost, and I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so they had this, like, six-month-old shepherd that, like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, the yeah. Worst one to not get socialized.
Yep, yep, yep. So it's important to kind of make sure that we're being safe health-wise, but still socializing, right? So something to keep in mind that a shocking amount of people don't know is that they aren't safe to be out. Because the other alternative, I either have that or I have the people that take their 8-week-old puppy to the dog park. And I'm like,
oh my God.
Oh God. Almost every single time I'm at a dog park, I see a puppy that's too young to be there. Or any park, for that matter, even like right. A normal park. That's this freaking specialty. It's every time I'm at a park, I see a puppy that is clearly not old enough to be fully vaccinated, just running around or walking on leash. I went to Target yesterday, and I just do the like curbside pickup or whatever. And there's these people walking around this tiny puppy in the parking lot on leash, going to like T-Mobile and all the different stores. And I'm like, oh God. So, yeah, your puppy cannot go out on leash on the ground until it's fully vaccinated. depending on your vet and where you got your puppy and their vaccine schedule that they're on is all different. But generally speaking, it's around 16 weeks that they finish all their vaccines. And then once they have finished all three or four sets, again, depending on where your dog's at, they can walk on the ground and go to parks and do all that. So obviously we don't want to wait until they're 16 weeks to start socializing them. So it's important to find ways to do that without risking their health. So something that I just converted Lily to recently is strollers. We use them a lot in the rescue because, again, especially with rescue dogs, because they tend to already have some sort of, I don't want to say issues, but some sort of bad experiences. We want to make sure that we go heavy on the socialization. So we tend to use strollers to get them adjusted to going out and about and seeing new people, going new places, seeing dogs, just to kind of get, and I'm not saying that those things are approaching them or interacting with them,
right?
But just getting used to, hey, these things exist in life, yeah. Right? Because baby puppies are pretty, their life is in your house because they're not old enough to leave yet, right? But until we throw them in that on leash, they don't know, right? So we want to start slowly getting them used to the idea of it before they're just on the ground fending for themselves, right?
Yeah.
So I think strollers are a really good way to do that. Or depending on the dog, you can carry them or whatever is easier for you. I personally don't really like being seen with a stroller, but... And then safe dog socialization, same thing. I don't want to wait until 16 weeks before I start introducing my puppy to new dogs, right? Because being dog friendly is severely important in my life. You wouldn't think so based on the dogs that I have, but it is. So a good way to kind of introduce them to new dogs is that if your friends have healthy vaccinated dogs that haven't been exposed to any potentially sick dogs, they're a prime candidate for play dates. And you can do that at your house or at their house, again, as long as no sick animals have been on either property for at least 6 months, preferably a year. So Parvo can live in the ground for up to a year. One of our fosters, we don't know this is how it got it, but we had two siblings that we split up, and one of them broke with Parvo, and the other one didn't. So, obviously, our assumption is that it got it in the foster home, but I know for a fact the foster home didn't take him anywhere. They weren't even socializing him at all. So, it's not like he went out in a stroller and somehow caught it. Like, no, he literally had never left the house. And I can't imagine that he had been exposed to it before because his brother didn't get it and they were together before, right? So, I mean, it's possible, but I'm going to guess not. So our only guess is that she had only lived in that house for a couple months. So the potential is that Parvo lived in the ground, right?
Hmm.
Or there's other options. You can bring it home on your shoes and all sorts of stuff. I mean, there's 1,000 ways he could have got it, but just you have to think about those things, right? Like, and it's not just Parvo, it's 1,000 things, but Parvo's just the best example. So we have to take that health consideration into account, but then also kind of balance that with socialization. Like the health risk is not so important that it outweighs the need for socialization, but the socialization isn't also important enough to risk their health. So it's a big balancing act that you really have to take into account. And if you're not sure, ask someone that knows.
And by the way, if you're vetting your friend's dogs for whether they've been around sick dogs or not, if your friend takes a dog to the dog park, take that dog off the list. You just don't know.
Yeah, I was kind of up in the air about that because obviously if your dog goes to the dog park, in theory, it's pretty goddamn social, which is exactly what I want. But yeah, the dog park or daycare does make it a little bit more susceptible. Daycare is a little bit safer of an option because generally they're vetting for vaccines and stuff. But not all daycares are created equal either. So,
yeah. So socialization is obviously super, super important during this time of puppyhood. So check out our episode on socialization for more information, like we said at the beginning, because I don't want us to repeat ourselves too much. But the gist of it is socialization is important throughout a dog's life, but is very, very impactful in the first 14 weeks of life. So make sure that you're socializing with people, animals, dogs, objects, environments, surfaces, sounds, the whole nine. And like Laura said, do it safely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our last break is coming up, and when we get back, we'll be talking about my favorite, The Terrible Teens.
Final margarita check. Laura, how is your champagne margarita pairing with your Pop-Tart?
So like I said, I'm a little mad that I can only have one right now. I will say you are accurate. They are much stronger. So even on the one, I'm feeling as good as I would normally on two. But it's pretty good. I'm still upset about the ice situation. But overall, I would do it again. It's a good, I feel like this would be perfect for a summer barbecue. That's what I feel like these were made for. Okay. Not very New Year's-y to me.
Mm-hmm. It is kind of like a sparkling punch, sort of.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I can't think of anything that would be more New Year's-y. I mean, they sound New Year's-y, but they don't taste New Year's-y to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what New Year's-y tastes like. This ain't it, though. All I'm saying. What about you? Are you on, like, marg number four, or what's going on?
No, I am nearing the end of marg number two.
Mm-hmm. Marg number two since we recorded, or including the...
For the whole night, Laura.
Uh-huh. I call bullshit.
Well, I'm sorry that you're wrong all the time.
All right. Churchill says I have to go, so we have to hurry up.
Okay.
The teenage phase is just my favorite because they become little assholes. And we all know how much I like awful dogs. So usually somewhere around 7 to 10 months, some dogs are early, some dogs are late, you suddenly have a different dog on your hands, and they're generally not all that likable. So welcome to maturity. It's kind of like having a teenager.
So I have a bullet point that Laura wrote for me, and it just says barf.
So when I was making this, all three bullet points said barf. So they just all said barf, barf, barf. But then when I came up with my things before Lily looked at it, I erased my barf for my talking points. I didn't just put barf on hers, is what I'm saying.
A barf.
A barf.
So we have talked about this a little bit in other episodes, but it is important to remember that dogs do go through puberty just like people do. And I don't know if you remember your teenage self, but like, do you want to hang out with that person? Because I sure as fuck do not want to hang out with teenage Lily Peterson.
I talk about all the time. I'm like, I don't know why my parents, to this day, I don't know why my parents still talk to me. I was such an awful little piece of shit. Awful.
And that's what your dog is going to be.
They are a lot cuter than us, though, so they get a little bit more leeway.
I mean, you maybe.
I mean, if you think you're cuter than any of my dogs, I've got some bad news for you.
Okay, all right. Okay. I hear you. So something that I wrote down, and I like waffled over it while I was writing it down because it didn't seem important, and it still doesn't seem important to me, but... I feel like it's worth mentioning because it's a pattern that has come up a lot. But dogs will often lose their interest in food as they grow out of puppyhood. And so like Jen, the breeder that I work with, she has it all in her little notes for the new families. Like, your puppy will lose interest in its food about 4 months old, and here's how to deal with it, blah, blah, blah. But it still seems like with every new litter, someone didn't read thoroughly or whatever. And they'll just post in the Facebook group, like, my dog is 4 months old and won't eat their food. Like, it's always like 4 months old, they won't eat their food. And again, I don't know why I'm finding it so important to say this, but it felt important for some reason. Maybe because dogs will also lose interest in a lot of other things around that time, like listening to you or going to the bathroom outside or... whatever it is. So this is where our consistency and our boundaries will get tested. And it's important to stick with our, I don't like the phrase stick with our guns. It's important to stick with what we've taught our puppies. And it might feel like you're doing some of your training all over again, but just stick with it. Don't cave, stay consistent, and you will get through it.
I've literally never in my life heard that about food. or experienced that. So a little me strange. Neither.
It's okay. Weird to me, but it's like, it is like clockwork. Like 4 months after a litter is born, there's someone posting in the group like, my dog is 4 months old and won't eat their food.
I've had a lot of 4 month olds. I've never had that happen. Sure. Okay. Maybe it's a doodle thing.
Maybe. But for reference, the way that you get through that is just keep putting their food out for a certain amount of time and eventually they will eat it. They are not going to starve themselves. So that's how you deal with that.
Fun fact. Dogs will not starve themselves. Cats will.
Yeah. I learned that last year.
Oh, God.
Did I tell you about that?
Please don't elaborate on that. Is your cat alive?
Yeah, he's fine.
Okay.
It was Jericho, who's causing some problems this year, too. But last year, he was just, like, really sick looking, and his hair was falling out in clumps. And we were like, what is wrong with our cat? And then we ran out. So I had switched him off of our Taste of the Wild food and onto, like, Merrick's or something, which I think is a higher quality food. And so it didn't occur to me that it would be the food, but I think we ran out of that. And so I like started giving him some of the old food and it was like he wolfed it down. And I was like, have you just not been eating? And all of a sudden his coat was like coming back in and he didn't look sick anymore. And I was like, oh my God, my cat has not been eating his food.
Yeah. So I found that out just by I read it somewhere and I was like, holy shit, cats will legit starve themselves to death. But dogs will not. They will eat anything if it comes down to it. But I had that same experience. We spent thousands of dollars on this goddamn cat. I don't remember what the backstory was. Like, we had rescued her as a kitten and then she got returned at like a year old. And she got so stressed out when she was returned, even though she was in a foster home. It's not like she was in a shelter. But she got so stressed out and threw such a fit that she almost died because she like stopped eating, lost all of her hair. So then her kidney and her liver values were going all over the place. She was in the vet for like months.
Oh my God.
Which of course didn't help because that is also a very strong, like it was this whole thing. Like the cat legit almost died. We put her in different foster homes trying to fix the issue, like the whole thing. It was like tens of thousands, maybe not tens of thousands, but it was thousands of dollars and months of this cat just like trying to kill itself.
Oh my God.
And that's when we stopped doing cats.
So you spent like thousands of dollars on this cat and your vet is like, yeah, the problem is she has the tumrums and like just is choosing to stay in that position.
Well, so she started eating, but by that point like her body and her coat was so fucked up, and then she started like over grooming and she didn't have any fur left to begin with, and so then she was like creating sores and it was like just this fucking waterfall of bullshit.
What a disaster.
Yeah, it really was. But anyways, teenagers.
Yes, dogs. Right. Our dog podcast.
Maybe we change it to Cataritaville. No. No.
No.
So, like Lily said, you will feel like they've lost some of their training and things like that. Like, I've literally had clients that we have gotten pretty great on leash. And then all of a sudden at like 9 months, it's like they've never been on a leash before. And I'm like, we spent so much time and made so much progress. Oh my God. And she's right. Just stick with it. Don't cave. Stay consistent. Stick to the training that got you there. Because yes, obviously you've hit a roadblock, but that doesn't mean there's something wrong with what you were doing. It's just the life of puppies.
Yeah, well, and it's important to note, like, just biologically what's happening for any mammal that's going through puberty is like all of a sudden everything is about procreating, and so they're not focused on a whole lot else except that natural instinct. And so of course on a walk, like all of a sudden you can smell everything around you and it means something different now because your hormones are kicking in, and it just makes sense.
Sorry, I was finishing my Pop-Tart. So to me, this is one of the most important times in puppyhood. And not just because I don't like the babies. but mostly because it's finally time to actually get to work, right? Like before, I mean, they still can't run and stuff like that, but before it's like, oh, well, they can't do this and they can't do that, and you got to get all your vaccines and you have to go through all that stupid baby bullshit. And now is the time that you can finally go do real things. So, yeah, it's basically it's time to get to work. It's time to start upping their exercising, upping their training, really start focusing on your long-term goals for them. So if you want them to be a therapy dog, if you want them to do this or that, this is a great time to start daycare, or if they're dog friendly or that's something that you're going to need because you're gone long periods of time, stuff like that. This is also a good age to start doing not daycare. I just said that. God damn it. the dog park, if you're a dog park person, that sort of thing. To me, this is kind of the beginning of the end, right? Like this is now they're entering adulthood. This is kind of our chance to set them up for who they're going to be, right? Obviously, you've been doing that before with their foundation, but again, that's baby bullshit. And I don't like it. I don't waste my time with that. 6 months and up. But yeah, so definitely once they hit their terrible teens, it gets a little bit harder for sure. But that also is kind of your signifier of like, all right, it's go time. What are we doing? what's our daily routine going to be like for the next 10 years? And kind of figuring that out, right? It's basically just your signifier of like, hey, I'm not a puppy anymore. What happens now?
You're a man now.
Yeah. Or a lady. Yeah, so don't disown your teenage puppy. Oh, I should say that is also the number one age that dogs get surrendered at. Literally like 9 months to a year and a half every time, because they're not cute and little and snuggly anymore. And all of a sudden, they need things like exercise and attention and training.
And they're a whole different dog. And also now they're 90 pounds.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, just stick with it. They will grow out of it, I promise. That's not who they are. Generally. I mean, sometimes it is. But but yeah, that's kind of your final exam before you get an enjoyable adult dog. But yeah, I mean, as far as like looking comprehensively at puppies, I think it's important to listen to episode 3 and episode 9. You need to make sure that you get your puppy from a good place, then listen to this episode, and then listen to episode 9. It's a puppy trifecta. Because yeah, puppies are a lot of work. That's why I don't like them. Godspeed.
And if you need any extra help with your puppy, you know which one of us not to reach out to. And you know which one of us to reach out to.
You call Lily when they're 8 weeks and peeing on your floor. And you call me when they're 9 months and ruining your life.
Yeah.
There you go. Have a good time.
Well, I think that about wraps it up. Our 11th episode.
Oh, I see the problem.
Okay. Our 11th episode is ready to be let out of the kennel. You can find me on Instagram at Miss Lily's Dogs or on my website, MissLily'sDogs.com, or my online training platform, Patreon.com/MissLily'sDogs.
And you can find me on Instagram at ProperPuppersLV and my website, ProperPuppersLV.com. In our next episode, we will be drinking spicy margaritas and talking about dog-on-dog skills next time on the Doggeritaville podcast. Also, disclaimer, when you're making spicy margaritas, you don't need to soak them in jalapenos as long as you think you do.
Oh, don't do that.
Next time on the Doggeritaville podcast, I'll tell you about my hijinks with jalapenos.
Jalapenos.
It'll burn your mouth right off.
Thanks for listening to Doggeritaville.
Send us an email at doggeritaville@gmail.com.
Or send us a DM on Instagram at Doggeritaville.
And let us know if there are any topics you'd like to see covered.
Or if there are any margaritas you want us to try.
And don't forget to leave us a review.
Until next time, give your dog a treat from us.